Yesterday, I spoke of happiness for no reason.
Hier, j'ai parlé de bonheur sans raison.
So that can be like it was for Samuel in deep nature for a long time. Alone. So where the conditions are very supportive for him. For someone else, that could be a disaster. But for him, that was very supportive conditions, and he's in that, we can say, pure space or pure contact with what is. And that purity of freedom can come to be possible through practice in any situation. Usually decades of practice, of really genuine following our best guess, making many mistakes, feeling foolish, keeping on going, and following the sweetness. Tell me where you are.
Feeling foolish. Just bargain foolish during
the game. Être fou?
Non.
Non.
Se sentir stupide, niaiseux, and then on following the heart.
Following the sweetness.
Mais en suivant. Cet élan de. Cet élan qui est riche.
And there's also freedom in any situation, even when not only the outer situation but also the inner situation is not very supportive. And so here this week we can practice, before we get towards figuring out our daily life, which is a very important question, and we will talk about that more at the end. We can play with feeling for deep okayness, sometimes more accessible by getting farther away from the head, touching in to the body, lower down, maybe the lower belly. Sometimes we're more confident that there is deep okayness when we actually review some really intensely difficult moments and feel back, that was terrible, and in a very surreal way, that was okay. So feeling for okayness by feeling underground, behind the scenes, a sense of okayness, aliveness in our everyday experience, may be more accessible through connecting low down in the body.
Donc, de ressentir un sentiment de profondeur, de meilleure connexion avec le contact qui peut se faire mieux avec le bas du corps.
And secondly, it can be helpful to reflect on past experiences, to actually remember intensely terrible moments. Not too much. But maybe moments that no longer would now throw you into a spiral. Maybe less charged ones, that it was really terrible and now you're okay with that. Maybe more along the lines of a natural disaster instead of a human disaster. That it was okay. Sometimes when we've lost someone, we can feel it's terribly painful and there's okayness. There's even more appreciation of life sometimes in those hard moments. And that can give us the confidence that feeling for okayness anyway, the okayness, Anyone have a good translation for okayness?
No, it's not in that sense.
Ah.
Could you do okay?
Tout va bien dans ce sens.
Se sentir satisfait avec
être en ce qui est déjà là.
So, because it's interesting, because it's not satisfait avec. It's not satisfied with. It's exactly not dependent on something to be satisfied with. But I know what you mean. It's like okay with, even though it's not okay. Even with anything, okay. Content? So we can just now invent a new phrase or word. Okete. Locate. No. As you feel.
Okay. I'll go sentir contenté.
Resilience.
What was it? Resilience. Ouais. Resilience is an effect of, definitely, of being in touch with. Correct is difficult one.
Yeah.
But is it also used for correct? Then it's not correct. I think contenté is closest, but it's up to you. Now you get the feeling. And sometimes it's much harder to tune into okayness, fullness, aliveness, no matter what, when it's not a terribly difficult situation. It can be more challenging in the everyday, where there's not pressure to stay aligned. It's easy to get out of our connection, out of center. One of my favorite people that I never met was French. Jacques Lisseron. Have you heard of him? Jacques Lisseron.
Jacques
Lisseron. So, he lived, we could say he lived in France at the wrong time, but he did a lot of good at that wrong time, as the Nazis came across France. We could say it was the wrong time, but in a way it was good he was there. And with a circle of friends organizing resistance. Though he was blind. Because he was blind, he was the one who was chosen to screen people who wanted to join. Because he was blind, he was more practiced in not just looking with the regular eyes, but feeling. He only made one mistake, and that was because they were in a hurry. And he heard his inner voice saying, something's not quite right, but they had the feeling of not having time enough to be careful. And so that was the end of that, but not of his life. As a child, he loved color and light, and he loved to play. And in an accident, he lost his eyes. A very simple accident. In the classroom, again, the feeling that there wasn't enough time. The kids were running out of the classroom. And that accident happened. And the first thing that happened, we could say, was something hard to notice, and that was that his parents fully accepted the situation. They never talked about that bad luck or that terribly wrong thing that happened. And so we can learn to bring that in. It's one of the most important things we can learn to bring in. That even if what happens, we could definitely say that's terrible. But if we spend much time in how terrible, we set ourselves into a disconnected kind of track. So we can let situations be acute. Sharp. Intense. And let that call forth 100% acceptance. Because we need to really get on with, we need to meet the situation that fully. And so on the bed of that, all that acceptance, he was 8 years old, so it was really important what the parents did and said. So they took him to symphonies, and not long after the accident, Jacques' father took him to a park in Paris where they lived, where he loved to play. And it was an acute situation. Jacques so wanted to see the trees that he had loved seeing. But on this kind of bed of acceptance, the possibility of feeling what's actually needed and important here is connection with the tree. My old way of connecting with the tree is not possible. But the kind of love of the tree, or the love of connection with that form of aliveness called tree, specific tree, in a specific park, pulled all his resources together and found that we can't go out to meet the tree. We can't go out through the eyes. And so something went inside out in him and met the tree. Is it okay? Like this. Like that. So we come on meditation retreat, and we think we're going to get a nice covering that we can zip closed. And what actually happens is that. And if we don't come on meditation retreat, then life does it anyway. And it may sound extreme, but Jacques was able to see the tree without eyes. He could see. When he was connected, he could see. He would go on walks with his friend who could see. He would put his hand on the shoulder of his friend so that they could really hike in the mountains. But it would be Jacques, many times, who would say, "Hey, do you see that lake over there behind that evergreen forest?" And the friend would then notice. So on retreat, we have the chance to kind of give up our normal ways of connecting and on purpose let ourselves be turned inside out by a love of life rather than trying to get the right way so that life doesn't quite touch us. So if we think of Samuel's inquiry, it's so easy to start using meditation to not be touched by life so that I don't have to bear my own reactions, the torture of my own programming, which is not me and not my fault, but it hurts. And it fights. It's not peaceful. And what Jacques said that for me is the most important report he gave from his experience. Description.
Une description de son événement.
Was that he found when he was playing, for example, and if he wanted to be first, or when he couldn't quite find the keys right away and he got frustrated, impatient with himself or his situation. So it's that layer of judgment and blame when things are hard. Then he couldn't see. And so he found that there was nothing worth leaving connection for. There was nothing worth disconnecting for. Not being first, not being right, not being wrong, not being small, not a sense of lack, not a sense of better than. And not because of some right and wrong. He said it's not a moral code. It just doesn't work otherwise. What works is connecting. And so if we can not wait to be forced, if we can feel the more gentle pressure of our own situations, that sort of nudges us towards, when I'm really obsessed with how right I am, it doesn't feel very good, actually. It doesn't feel as good as who knows. It doesn't feel, when I'm in reaction, like for example, I'm right, you're wrong, you hurt me, it hurts. And coming back to connection with what's better than being right can allow a response to situations that may certainly need a response. So he had to adjust his life when he could no longer see. And that practice allowed him to respond honestly and with his whole life when the political situation gave him the chance to respond. So as we've come into silence and coming into retreat, your name is Jade, right? So Jade's question of feeling for what is too much doing and what is too little doing. What is too much letting go and what is too little letting go. And we can also kind of open the question out more. What is the quality of doing or relaxing that has aliveness in it? The quality of doing or not doing that's without aggression. So there can be a response to something that people would easily call evil or terrible, where we're unwilling to waste any drop of energy on blame. A deep confidence that life can respond through us to any situation. So it's partly just through experimentation, which mostly means making mistakes. And when we get kind of lucky, we find ourselves in a flow where, let's say, for example, we find that our body is so relaxed that we can hear the breath is like sleeping breath, but the mind is awake with that kind of freshness of morning. The mind is awake, the body is asleep, apparently. And so much can happen. There can come an insight, there can come healing. So it's a completely other kind of activity. So we've already mentioned today, and it's worth mentioning again, partly knowing yourself well. If you know you tend to avoid, then be a little pushy for yourself. If you tend to avoid being on time, then be a little pushy to go early. And if you tend to be too hard on yourself, go crazy being loose. Maybe not coming late to the hall, but maybe staying late after the bell rings. And so, if we can be less concerned with, do I have the right amount of doing and not doing, going more towards the feeling that might come in a memory of the feeling of wholeheartedness. And so if you've done creative things, so maybe music or art or writing, or in sports also, where you're in a flow and you don't notice time passing, ideas better than your own come to you, happen to you. Yeah. Ideas better than your own come to you, happen to you, and happen to you. And similarly, with creativity and sports, it could be just a boring enough activity that's repetitive enough.
très répétitif, un peu plat.
That so-called mindless enough.
Qui a pas vraiment besoin d'esprit.
Could be gardening or walking.
Ça peut être du jardinage ou juste marcher.
And the shape of the brain waves changes.
Et les formes de courants dans le système changent.
And so now there starts to be more and more brain research, which is very interesting.
Maintenant, il y a de plus en plus de recherches sur le cerveau qui est très intéressant.
And they start to study also people who are meditating.
Et ils commencent à étudier les personnes qui méditent.
And from what I've seen so far, there are some things that can be measured and some things not. So they seem to measure when there's simple meditation like mindfulness, so just noticing that I have a body. Noticing that I have a mind, so there's thinking or there's a foot, skin on ground, feeling. Just that simplicity, so it's coming towards wholeheartedness. It's called mindfulness, it's really wholeheartedness. Mindfulness equals wholeheartedness.
Conscience égale un cœur plein et rempli.
Mindfulness is not the practice of me watching myself do something. It's easy to take it that way. But mindfulness is not being split, not being divided. Not watching, which equals controlling, judging, and blaming. Blaming, more or less like judging. And so just that simplicity is like reducing the equations to something more simple. Just coming in touch with the body or whatever's happening in the mind brings more happiness into people's lives. That's been measured. In a particular meditation, what we can notice, when we find a way to notice without disturbing, we can notice as we quiet down, so to notice without disturbing ourselves, without breaking the calm, without bringing up the alarm system. We can notice that the breath changes. We can notice that sometimes the sense of boundary of the body changes. And we have more of a sense of space. So they've noticed that the areas in the brain that talk about where the body is located start to get quiet. And this is also the description of meditators from thousands of years. There was a Buddhist nun named Dhammadinna. Dhammadinna. Who also was asked, someone asked her some questions. It happened to be her ex-husband who came to ask her questions. Who knows what was going on there? She was the, Buddha had considered her to be the best of the women teachers at that time. She also describes that as we come into meditation, even though there may be thinking going on, the body starts to relax, the breath changes, and there starts to be more sense of space. And we can encourage that, we can invite that. We can't make it happen, it's not another program.
On peut le faire arriver.
But we can play with letting the body spread out, feeling the space around the body. And even copying that relaxed breath on purpose, a little longer than you want to. It helps invite the brain waves into a more relaxed shape. Usually what happens next is then language centers start to get quiet in the brain. And the way Dhammadina talks about that is a different experience of meaning. Experience of meaning. So usually we think of something meaningful when we can explain why. We usually think of something being meaningful, an experience is meaningful because it reminds me of last time I was in this area.
Honestly, something this job is doing, professionals do it for 15 minutes and then they switch. You have to have two doing it. I can do it right now if you want.
We're so close to being done. Yeah, it's true.
It's not longer than that.
I know.
Professionals earning their life with that. So right now his brain is just like, oh girl, I can take this. So he's got to be replaced or you have to stop. Like, it's not gonna get better. I'm saying it's my job and I know it.
Yeah. So if we can go a few more minutes slowly, then we'll be done.
Okay. So you have to repeat the last one.
Yes. There's a, as the first, there's a different experience of body. A different experience of body.
In the experience.
And then there's a different experience of words and meaning.
Yeah, in the experience, the more.
As we get more quiet. Usually we think that something is meaningful. Because it reminds us of something in the past. But when we allow the mind to lose touch with maps and words, a richer kind of meaning comes up. The last thing that happens, and this is the last part of the talk, coming into deepest meditation, is a different experience of mind. Not just words, wordy mind. Not just a different experience of the wordy, verbal mind. A different experience of not only verbal mind, but deep mind. And so perception changes. And what we spoke about yesterday, the Vedana, the filtering of friend, enemy, therefore not important, is quiet. So even that very deepest alarm system that experiences me as separate from the world can be allowed to be quiet. It's safe. In that deep mind, quiet, this can happen. The turning inside out, transformation. Parts of us that now seem to be who we really are. Can be gone completely. Veronique, did you want to ask something before?
No, you answered it.
Okay, great. May all beings be in deep peace. Without reason. May our practice and our lives be dedicated. Wholeheartedly. Into the momentum towards liberation for all.